Tēnā koe, Jean.
Oh, kia ora, tēnā koe. Aroha mai, my phone wasn't plugged in and went flat.
Oh, never mind, we've got you now. So thanks very much for joining us on a Friday night. Gosh, a big week this week.
Oh, it has been. It's been a big 6 weeks, actually. That baby was taken, all that drama happened on the 6th of May.
Yes, of course, it was a while ago. Now, Jean, just give us an overview. Where is the breakdown in communication happening between the state and the whānau? Where's it happening?
Well, I think that this case highlights a number of issues. I think it's manifested in a lack of responsibility by the state to engage with whānau appropriately. It's given rise to assumptions and allows one view, a view from a social worker that determines the outcome of a baby, and it's very clear that families and whānau don't have any input into that. There's lots of suggestions that those social worker reports are false, allegations are based on assumption, and for many whānau whose babies are uplifted, after a long, hideous, extremely stressful battle, many of those whānau eventually get their babies back 2-3 years later at a horrific, horrific price to them financially, through, you know, just battling to get it. So, you know, there is a systemic breakdown here. It's got multiple faces on it. You cannot pinpoint one particular area where it's breaking down for whānau.
Well, when is it justified to uplift a child in your experience?
Well, I would always say it is justified when the care and protection of a child is seen as being warranted. And I would totally, totally agree that where a child is in need of care and protection, that care and protection order or that need to someone to come in and help the whānau would be at the beginning of a pregnancy, not hours after given birth. And when you look at the way that this has been carried out, the assumptions of this woman can never be a good mother. We're talking about subsequent children here in this case. That is a ridiculous assumption. I mean, in the country today where a woman who is in prison can have a baby and keep her baby for 2 years, and yet we have women out in the community who, because of the fact that they had a previous baby uplifted by Oranga Tamariki, that the subsequent child is automatically uplifted. I mean, that's just a ridiculous, ridiculous piece of legislation. And I am anybody that would even think that was okay needs to have their heads read.
But Jean, Melanie did report in this video report that the young father that we saw with his, you know, we couldn't see his face, but he was there the whole time, that he has a history of domestic violence, heavy marijuana use, and lives a transient lifestyle. When did the grounds become clear that you must take a child?
Oh, I don't think the grounds are ever clear in this case and in this particular case. I don't really want to talk about this case specifically because it's still before the courts and it won't be determined until next Tuesday or next Wednesday. But clearly, if you look at this case or what it is, you have a young 15-year-old, we're talking about the first baby in this instance, a young 15-year-old who has a relationship with a 16, 17-year-old girl, and they make a baby together. So he's living with his family, she's living with her family, and of course both families have these dysfunctional relationships where there are episodes of domestic violence. Now we have to be careful here because when we start to talk about this domestic violence has not been, it has not been determined what degree of domestic violence we're talking about. You know, a couple having an argument and throwing a cup across the room and a police officer being called because the neighbours next door hear them shouting at each other, that's domestic violence. A couple standing in a driveway and arguing and slamming doors and punching windows in and having the neighbours called, that's domestic violence. So when you have this kind of attention now on families, and you have new laws around what is domestic violence. Every call out where families are arguing or throwing things or breaking furniture or yelling or screaming or abusing each other, that is domestic violence, and that's how it's been termed. So we see a huge increase in a rise of accounts of domestic violence. And if you have a look at the statistics, 800,000 statistics over the last 15 months in New Zealand, but of only which about 120,000 of them were seen to be requiring of any attention. The rest were dismissed as being obviously stupid. You know, you have to put some sanity around this. When you get a police department now in every city that has a domestic violence committee or group, a police officer and a couple of other people that work with him, you know, social workers or support workers, and then you have 21 DHBs, and every single DHB you now have a domestic violence group or people that that are a part of that, that go to the A&E department whenever there's a domestic violence call out or something, you're naturally going to get an increase in the number of claimed or the increase in the number of activities.
So you're saying it's mislabeled. It's mislabeled,
yes,
in many cases.
Absolutely. Right. Absolutely mislabeled. And when you have a look at this particular case, you've got brother and sister arguing outside a house and throwing furniture around. You've got a sister and a brother fighting over stupid things in the driveway where neighbours have run. You've got parents who are fighting. You know, I'm talking about yelling, screaming, throwing things, smashing windows. It's domestic violence in any sense. Of course it is. But, you know, what happened in this case, in the first case, is that both grandmothers identified that their husbands and partners had were not able to contain themselves. And so both grandmothers moved out, left their prospective partners and husbands, and went and found other homes to live in and set up separately from their home. Now, you think about, when we think about how families live in domestic violence, it's well documented. It takes years and years and years, and some women never leave. They just stay there, put up with it. But these two grandmothers, for the sake of their first grandchild that had been taken by Oranga Tamariki, they made the changes and they left their husbands. They set up separately to get their granddaughter back.
It does seem so in this case. But Jean, can I ask you, do you have any sympathy for Oranga Tamariki at all?
Look, I think that we shouldn't be focusing on whether people are sympathetic or whether or not they've made a mistake. What is absolutely obvious is that the system is broken. We are talking about a system that systematically targets, it racially profiles poor people, it racially profiles people who cannot provide accommodation, a home, a nice house, a this or a that. When I listen to the report, from what I saw and what I heard and what I witnessed, I thought, this cannot be happening in New Zealand today. And even in the last 6 weeks, the stories that I've heard from people, the things that people have told me, I started a Facebook, not one more baby taken. And within 3 weeks, I have 4,500 people right now on that Facebook page, and we invited people who had had history as being abused in care or had children in care or were trying to take or get their children back, how could we help them? And every story on that Facebook page is heart-rending. It is sad. It is horrible. And it is a system right now that's broken. Now, people say to me, but, you know, what about these families who can't look after their kids? I'm saying yes, and there are lots of them, and we need to support them. why aren't they able to look after their children? New Zealand has a huge history. We have poverty in homes. Our children are less likely, and I'm talking Māori children because I'm Māori, they are less likely to get an education in this country. They are less likely to get good health care. They're less likely for their parents to be working and earning over the minimum wage. They are less likely to have a roof over their head. They're less likely to be able to provide and save for their retirement. Now, that's a horrible, horrible situation to be in when you're tangata whenua. And I'm saying, OK, why can't we have a different system for our babies and our Indigenous Māori mothers? We've got plenty to learn from. We just have to look overseas. Look what's happened in Canada. They've got 6,000 Indigenous children missing because they have a welfare system, which is what we've adopted, and they have an uplift, which is horrific, and that's where we're heading. Right. And they have a policy where children can be uplifted, adopted, and taken out of their country without the permission of their parents, without their knowledge and without their consent. We're heading that way too.
All right, Jean, well, thank you very much. You're very passionate about the cause, obviously, and we'll check in with you later on as the story progresses, so thank you.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate having the time and opportunity to share my passion with you. Thank you.
Very good. That's midwife Jean Tahuia.